It's common knowledge that for the last 40 years, Canada has been a fertile breeding ground for comedians. Sure, we all know Dan Aykroyd, Tommy Chong, Martin Short, John Candy, Phil Hartman, Howie Mandel, Seth Rogen, Tom Green, Norm Macdonald, Russell Peters, Will Arnett, and Mike Myers. They're all proof this country churns out chuckles at a factory pace. But there's also the Frantics, Gavin Crawford, Nikki Payne, Fraser Young, Jason Rouse, Rick Mercer, Deborah D. Giovanni, and Mike Macdonald. Living north of the American border affords Canadians the vantage point of looking in from the outside, and the results have usually been hilarious. Growing up in the city that spawned SCTV, The Kids in the Hall, Wayne's World, Jim Carrey, and Lorne Michaels, some of the comedy bug rubbed off on me by just becoming a huge fan of comedy, period. It's only in the last few years have I started to cool my rabid comedy album collecting. Along with it being a comedy hotbed, Toronto is also a preferred Hollywood movie locale, and I've been lucky enough to have met a few comedy heroes of mine over the years. A previous podcast episode with Scott Thompson of the Kids in the Hall fame was one such moment captured for all to hear here on this podcast. This episode is another such instance, and it's with Sean Cullen. Sean Cullen is just about the funniest guy you'll ever see, you'll ever meet, you'll ever hear. Time magazine called him the vanguard of comedy's next generation. Big words to live up to, but his work proves he's risen to the occasion. I became aware of Sean through his comedy troupe Corky and the Juice Pigs. Maybe fans of Mad TV might be aware of them too from their many appearances on the show. Since going solo, Cullen has been on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Late Show with Craig Kilborn, The Ellen Show, which was the Ellen DeGeneres sitcom, and most recently, Last Comic Standing. He's had his own CBC television show appropriately titled The Sean Cullen Show, put out two solo comedy albums, Sean Cullen Live and I Am a Human Man, and written 5 books for young adults. He also hosts his own podcast called The Sean Pod. With all that on his plate, Sean was still gracious enough to stop by on our podcast, and the result is this episode. I have to admit, during the taping, I could not believe Sean Cullen was at my place. I wouldn't say I was starstruck, but rather very impressed with myself, even though Nick was the one who brought him down. Once again, a big thank you to Blue Mic Microphones. Thank you very much. Skull Candy Headphones, Vans Shoes, and thanks to everyone who has left a review or a rating on iTunes. Every rating, every review that is submitted really, really, it just helps the podcast's ranking. It helps the podcast's profile on iTunes. I've read them all, and I appreciate each and every one of them, so thank you very much for leaving them. Okay, without further ado, Sean Cullen is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. Okay, we're here. We're starting.
What's this name of this podcast?
The official Danko Jones podcast.
It's official.
This is the official one. Yeah, this is official.
Is there an unofficial one that has been competing with you?
Well, we've never really cleared.
Danko Jones is doing this thing.
We've never cleared that issue up as to why it's called official. But I used to do a podcast before the whole podcast phenomenon. Back in
just alone in your room talking.
04.
It's called talking to yourself, is what it's called.
No, in 05.
Podcast begins. Yeah, why am I so sad?
I had Bluetooth like way before anyone else had Bluetooth. It was just
me pushing my phone into someone's face.
Yeah. Okay, so let's introduce our guest here.
Hello.
I am a huge fan of our guest today. Mr. Sean Cullen. Comedian. Frog. Witches and children.
Yeah, That's like, that's basically like starting off with
everyone's favorite guy.
Some people's favorite guy.
The back of the room is dying.
I didn't mean it as a bad thing. No, I meant it as the ultimate compliment. I mean,
In some ways, it is, you know. I'm in the same boat, but a much smaller boat.
You have a boat that is not really powered. It's driven by your own strength.
It's a miniature boat on a mantelpiece.
That's nice.
Pretend I'm in it. Back in the, I don't know, we're going back maybe the early 90s, mm-hmm. there used to be these stand-up comedian specials where they would cut up a bunch of people. And there was one show, like it's on Global at 11 o'clock at night, and they had Norm Macdonald on, they had Ellen DeGeneres on, just all these montages of like funny lines. And Corky and the Juice Pigs, which is your old band, mm-hmm. had this thing, had this song you guys were playing. And I had no idea who you guys were at the time. And you blew my mind. I was recording it because I used to record all these like comedy specials and stuff, and I watched that bit, only that bit, over and over and over again. It was this thing, and then you did this song, and then you did it in different ways, and then the final one was you, like someone who's dyslexic, and then you did the song again. I don't know if you remember that. Oh,
gee whiz. It was a song.
Was it
like a gay Eskimo?
It could have been that, when but everything like was Marcy, backwards.
Oh, I'm okay.
No, it wasn't that.
No, I'm not sure.
But anyways, I remember
that.
We did
this thing called the Game 2 Game Show Host Meet on the Street, which wasn't a song, but it was like, "Hi, Bill, how are you?"
Right.
"I'm just fine, since I got my brand new Ford Vega. It's beautiful." And whatever, and then we do, it wasn't a Ford Vega, it was a Chevy Vega.
I think it was that.
Yeah, and then two dyslexic game show announcers meet on the street. "Bill, hi, you or how?" "Fine, Joss Bob." "Vega Chevy you just got." And it was weird.
I remember I saw you guys, Corky and the Juice Pigs, not once in a day, but twice in a day. At the Rivoli, the All Ages matinee, and also the later show.
So how old were you then?
I was probably 13 or 14.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And you got 15. Into the Dirty Late Show, too.
Yeah, I somehow managed to make it happen. And I was also a huge fan.
Well, that's nice.
We're big fans.
Well, you know what? I think the Juice Pigs probably would have done a lot better now when there's so much social media and so much internet.
Right.
People would have found it, and it would have gone viral.
A group like Garfunkel and Oates or something, you kind of see. And the ability to really make videos around it, I think, is just, I mean, but in a weird way, that was what made you so unique, was the video for Pandas. You know, when I was a kid and I watched that, I was just like, wow, I think A, this song is hilarious, but B, this video is hilarious. And the idea of hilarious videos was still such a novelty.
Well, you know, there was no place to play them.
Right.
I mean, you know, and when the first music video started coming out, and Much Music was playing videos, it was so intense and real, and you know, and you had to have so much muscle behind you to get your video in rotation.
Right.
And then we were just ourselves, and people loved the video, but that didn't translate into it getting on very regularly. So we got a Factor grant, I think, to do REM video, and that was fun and weird, but I don't know. It's what's really great now is that you can just make your own video and put it up on the internet, and people can come and find it. You don't have to wait for a network to approve. Yeah. And I think that's the way the world is going to go. There's going to be servers where you download the entertainment you want, and networks are slowly going to erode to nothing.
But do you think there's going to be some sort of greater entertainment power in that sense? You know what I mean? Like, who will be controlling those servers?
I don't know. There's something will happen. I mean, it'll be people like Google will be.
You know,
I mean, they'll become the new networks, you know?
Yeah.
But the philosophy, the basic philosophy of Google is a lot more open than networks ever were.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's still,
it's literally open. It's like open source.
And almost. So, well, you can, if you don't like that, you don't like that. Uh-huh. And what's great about most things on the internet is you go looking for it, so you can't complain that it's somehow filthy.
Right.
Right? It's like the great thing about HBO is they can make shows, and you subscribe, and you want to see it, so you're not going to call in and say, "There's people touching each other on that show, and I don't like it." So that's what you paid for. that? Danko, you guys had my favorite my favorite version of Silver Cup.
Oh my God!
Do you remember that show?
I'm glad that someone heard that.
Fire it up! Everybody wants that silver cup. it up!
Is that a hockey song?
Oh yeah! It was for the TSN during the playoffs. Right?
Yeah, years ago, they were getting TSN was getting different bands and different singers to do this one song that was written by Andy Curran, formerly of Coney Hatch. And about the Stanley Cup called Silver Cup. So we asked permission if we could rewrite it. We rewrote it. And then I met Dave Hodge that day. And growing up with Hockey Night in Canada, this guy walks in. Yeah. And Dave Hodge, whether people know it or not, now this is very Canadian for a lot of people listening. They might not know who Dave Hodge is. He was the voice of our version of Monday Night Football as Hockey Night in Canada. He was the voice.
He's the John Madden kind of. You know.
Exactly. He comes in. He has all our records. He knows who Nico Case is.
Yeah.
He wanted to know our opinion on the Sadies.
Yeah.
And I'm just staring at him. I couldn't believe that this guy knew. It was so
connected
with music.
Well, there's a weird kind of indie rock connection with hockey. Ron McLean is like totally into like.
Another guy.
Yeah, it's like you hear Wintersleep. And like they use these songs as the opening for Hockey Night in Canada, the Saturday night. It's equivalent of like Monday Night Football in Canada, but it's just like crazy. They use all this indie music to kind of roll into the show, and I don't know. It's something weird. I mean, but you know, Boy Devereaux had his own record labels, also a hockey player, and you know, and he came on my show at the Drake and played Keep on Rocking in the Free World. It was quite an exciting time for us.
Yeah, that sounds. Did you dance?
I danced about.
When I first met you, I don't even know if you remember this. We were playing at the City TV building, the Much Music building.
Was it the Schmooze or something?
Yeah, it was the Schmooze. We were in the parking lot. We played one song.
The Stampeders were playing that day, too. Didn't they do Sweet City Woman? But like when they turned it, it was for the film festival, isn't it?
For the Toronto International Film Festival. Yeah. There was like a big party at the Much Music building.
Right, right.
And we were...
I've been outside of it with the notebook trying to get autographs every year.
That's sad for you.
It is, but and, rewarding in terms of
there's all kinds of people, newscasters, local actors who are nationally known, some international people. I zeroed in on Sean because I'm honest to goodness fan, and to get in with you, we were setting up our gear on the stage, and you were looking at the stage, and I saw you looking at us. I don't know if you remember this, but I went to you. I looked at you and I said, "Food of choice." Big fan. Gross. I don't know if you remember that.
I was afraid. I was frightened by you at that time.
I that's all I said to you, and I was trying to get in with you through your bits.
It's creepy when that happens.
Yeah. No. And
have you had that happen to you, where someone just comes up to you and says the name of a song and then backs away while staring at you slowly? I mean, I'm assuming that's what you did you said "Food of Choice."
Well, you saying that back to me is making me realize that I probably freaked you out.
No, it was very nice, People, it's nice to be in any way recognized.
"Food of Choice" is one of Sean's bits.
I ask people for a food, and then I think of an elaborate way to kill them with it.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah. It's on YouTube.
I've got the CD. So I
feel like a loser.
You aren't. You're a winner.
Thank
you.
You've got your own microphone.
I got my own microphone.
That makes you a winner.
I got an iPhone. Mm-hmm. And, that's cool, right?
Yeah, iPhones. For sure.
And then afterwards, now this is where the story takes a turn, is I saw you maybe a month or two later. You were doing the Producers at the time, right?
Oh, my
on
God.
Yonge Street.
Yeah.
And I walked by you. We were walking by each other on the side of the street where the Eaton Center is.
Yeah.
So what side is that? That's the west side?
Yeah.
That would be the west side.
And... I walked by you and I was like, "Hey!"
And I said nothing to you.
And you walked by.
Ooh,
you were
in the zone. Christ. I'm sure you were in the zone.
But hey, man, I wasn't. I wasn't in my stage gear, I noted it. And this podcast, some of the people that have been on the podcast, I have very similar stories about them and us.
You were just
so you walked by. Yeah, you walked by, and I
I was like, I basically just
well, it isn't
stonewalled you.
Yeah, you just walk by. But you know, who knows what you could. I mean, it was right across the street from the theater.
Just another man on the street.
Yeah, so I remember these things.
I can never imagine anyone would recognize me on the street, so I probably was frightened by you.
Well, hey,
I thought you were mad.
I ended up subscribing to your podcast. Well, so yeah. It didn't.
I would like my meeting story. I don't have a general meeting story because I can't remember the first time we ever.
I came to see you at the Drake doing your show.
Yes, and then you played the Drake a few times. And it was amazing.
Yeah. It was fun.
But I remember seeing you at Rivoli because you were hosting a show that I was with Graham Wagner. We were doing those interviews at, and you went up doing an interview later on, like an improvised interview with Graham. Do you remember that?
Oh,
at the
Drake? I do.
And it was really fun, and you started the show with that. But that one you were hosting, and I hadn't seen you really live, I don't think, maybe since Corky and the Juice Pigs.
And
like,
it was a disappointment.
It was whatever. What's the opposite of it? It was an appointment. It was a total appointment.
You were appointed.
With great times. And I was just like, because I was just starting new comedy and having that early stage, like, not confidence. And you just shot that to pieces because I was like, well, this is amazing. I just was really the improvised aspects and just where you were going. I realized I was just so impressed. This is now getting very embarrassing.
I'm sorry.
I'm lathering you up. I'll be giving you a shave.
Nick and I are
a hot shave in a second.
Hot shave.
I shouldn't be embarrassed for this. Is so Canadian to be like, I'm sorry. I'm complimenting you.
We get a lot of guests here from the music end of things. Scott Thompson's been on this. Nikki Payne's also been on the podcast. Oh, it's lately it's been just a lot of bunch of band guys and
boho musicians.
We're like, yeah, hey, how's it going, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then when we get comedians, we kind of fall over each other. It's a different thing.
What's weird is about rock and roll and comedy.
Huge
comedians want to be rock and rollers. Rock and rollers want to be comedians.
But you do both.
You incorporate a lot of that, and that's why I also thought, well, there's the bridge. We can have Sean on, and we can talk about music very seamlessly.
Was there like music? Were you music and comedy? Was it rising at the same time for you? Your interest in both, and you just put them together.
Well, it kind of came as I don't know. I mean, I always sang. And yeah. I comedy. When we first started, the Juice Pigs, we started by doing. We'd be at parties at university, and we'd just be improvising and try and like keep it going. And then we did an amateur comedy contest, and we said, oh, we should do some songs too, just to keep like a variety, because we can all sing and we should do that. So it ended up working out great for that, and you know, it just kind of heightens the whole experience with comedy. You can do the spoken word, and then the song kind of lifts.
Shifting
the show.
Around is so fun.
Well,
to
yeah,
be able
and then
to
we
do.
Tried to be fast paced and keep moving and keep people guessing as to what was going to come next.
Because I was in bands for a really long time, and but they were like punk rock bands. So my type of singing, if I were to break into a song, would be, I don't know what it would be.
Screaming.
It'd be screaming. I'd have to do a screaming
thing.
But
what's your background with music?
Well, I never really learned to play any instruments. So when I was a kid, I took piano lessons and violin lessons. Mm-hmm. I sang in the Kiwanis Festival, you know, every year.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And I never was really trained at all as a singer. And I did musicals in high school. And then on a whim, I kind of auditioned for drama school. But I went there. I got kind of booted after 3 years, and I don't know, it's just I kind of fell into comedy. Mm-hmm. The thing about acting is you just have to be somebody else's, you have to be fit into someone else's vision. With comedy, you write your own show and you're in it, and it's kind of led to a lot of good things. But I don't know. I don't know. My musical background, I love music. I mean, my family's musical.
Yeah.
What's funny is I have Sirius Satellite Radio right now in my car.
Great station.
And a great station is 70s, the 70s on 7. And it's all this music. When I remember I would go home from school and eat soup at lunchtime, my mom would be listening to the radio, and I just remember all these songs, and I had a propensity for learning lyrics of songs.
So what kinds of songs?
Oh, like, give me the free people, live free my soul, gonna get lost. Right. And or like, every day I go to sleep and leave the lights on. weird kind of 70s gold, you know, like been through the desert on a horse with no name.
America.
Like melodic rock, you know. Yeah. And the 70s was a time when, you know, there'd be like, radio would be like, here's one from Black Sabbath and now Terry Jacks.
Right.
And you'd just be like jumping all over the map. And that kind of appealed to my sense of my sensibility. Yeah. And I always loved music, and, you know, I went on to, like, Joe Jackson and Elvis Costello and people like that, Nick Lowe. And but I never played because I think my voice was my instrument. And and even with comedy, when I left the Juice Bigs, I didn't want to play. I didn't want to have something that I had to hold on to and move.
You like having anchored to something. Like almost a support
I like to have someone, I prefer that.
Yeah.
I think of myself more as an entertainer or a cabaret performer than I do a musical stand-up.
I see that as well.
Right, yeah. I always viewed it as like very, very separate things in a sense with you, in that, you know, you could perform for stand-up for whatever X amount of minutes without pulling out a song, you know? Like the song is a, it's like a cherry
on top. It's a crutch.
Yeah. New York Times is reporting on the stuff Rob Ford is doing because it's crazy. Because we had a crazy mayor 15 years ago. Lastman.
But he wasn't threatening. He wasn't that threatening the way Rob Ford
He was
had
kind of
become.
Fun because he. Yeah. But it also
and he could
terrible.
Take a joke. He
it
could
also
take a
started
joke.
With his inauguration where he had the ultimate right winger, Don Cherry, speak at it and tell all the pinkos that their time was done.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Pinkos? Yeah. Is this 1948? What is going on?
People are just trying to live in a
you
city.
You bike
here.
Riding pinkos. So if you ride a bike, obviously, Lance Armstrong, giant pinko.
Right.
Yeah.
The old timiest form of transport is suddenly.
Suddenly, yes. You horse riding horse lovers.
Look at that guy in the park.
Walking on his feet. Loser, get a car.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, God. Rollerbladers, though. How do we feel?
I'm a bit frightened by them.
Me too.
There's one of, there was a joke someone said in our, and I know I shouldn't laugh at it, but in our hockey dressing room one day, he said, what's the hardest part about rollerblading? Telling your parents you're gay.
It's a classic.
It is a classic.
It's a classic.
And you have to laugh a little bit.
Every time.
Although there's some very manly rollerbladers and womenly.
Yes, more so. But yeah, what's... You could also say what's, you know, what's the hardest thing about being on the women's roller derby team?
What?
Telling your parents you're gay. I mean, you could
put
find
that,
a lot of different...
What's the hardest thing about joining the Navy? Telling your parents you're gay.
What's
the hardest thing about eating a sandwich? Telling your parents you're gay.
What's the hardest thing about having, like, a large collection of commemorative plates?
Telling your parents you're gay. What's the hardest part about stopping your parents from having sex with you? Telling your parents you're gay.
What's the trickiest element of dog ownership?
Telling your parents you're gay. Yeah, it's true. That really could fit into anywhere.
I think that we should start...
What's the hardest part of getting a renewed driver's license? Telling your parents you're gay.
What's
it really is one of the hardest things you could do, I think.
What's the hardest part about being born? Like, just the act of being birthed?
Ow. Telling your parents you're gay. Okay. What's the hardest part of an optometrist exam? Telling your parents you're gay.
And filling out some of the insurance forms afterwards.
That's really quite long
and
overwhelming.
I really want to keep going with
telling
this.
Your parents are gay.
I'm keeping all of this, by the way.
Good idea.
I think this is really the most important part of it.
Just don't tell my parents I'm gay.
Yeah, so...
Dan.
So I'm going to ruin that moment with the word so and then an ellipsis. Did you ever have a 9-to-5 period?
Well, a very short time.
Yeah.
Jobs I've had. I worked at Wendy's in Peterborough. I worked at Burger King for a short time.
Sure.
Then I worked at Beaver Gas, a gas station, for about 8 months. Then I went to university. I always tried to work in my field, you know?
Yeah.
But then when I came to Toronto, I did pedicabbing for a while.
Oh, cool.
But, yeah. and rickshaws, and yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah,
I really didn't enjoy pulling people around. I do not like to serve people. It's a thing I just don't.
Yeah, enjoy. And you have to. Isn't it?
I realize that about myself.
Get paid like the. There's a no set price.
There is a by the block.
Okay.
And then they can tip you.
I feel bad for them. I've only done it when there's like
really horrible.
No cabs available. If the subway breaks down or if there's.
Who are the people using this? I mean, in general, like are these
it would be,
are
I would
like,
use it in that situation.
Donkey.
Like, yes, I know. It's not cool.
Yeah, it's a guy. It's a guy with the worst idea of how to impress his date in the world.
All right, I'll hire a boy to run.
Yeah,
who will be much fitter than me.
I know. I'll find this hot guy to like pull us. But it was actually another comedian who mentioned Rock Pile to me. It was Andy Kindler.
Oh, I love Andy.
Name check Nick Lowe. And I was opening for him, which was amazing. I'm really stoked. You have no idea. I love doing comedy, but I still get very excited to be working with people who I respect. It's the best.
No,
you're sick of it, I can tell.
I'm tired of people I respect.
Yeah. If they could only just all disappear,
you'd disrespect the people.
Well, speaking of that, I've noticed your banter back and forth with Gordon Pinsett.
I know.
Someone should bottle that and put that as a
it's TV very entertaining,
show.
But people, I get too mean to Gordon, you know.
Well, that's the best part. You can actually feel his eyebrow, like, right, just
well, he's
checking
just
in with you.
So unassailable, you know. Mm-hmm. He's just so amazing and just such a legend in his own mind, or in his own life, his own time. And,
everything,
all of those things. And, you know, he's really charming and, you know, he's unassailable. You can't haul down Gordon Pinsett. He's just beyond you.
Just on the voice alone.
Yes, I know. And now he's doing the Olympic trailers for the Olympic Games. But when I first worked with him, I was doing my comedy special for CBC when I first went solo called Comics. They used to do a series called Comics,
right.
Half hours. You had to have a B-roll kind of sketch.
Uh-huh.
And mine was, I did this character called Dame Sybil.
Right.
And she's a crazy, like, battle actress. And I was teaching a master class of acting, and they had all these young actors, and Gordon Pinsett, they asked him to do it with us. And he could not stop laughing through the whole thing. Like, he would just ruin every take. And he said something about you. You make me laugh. And so he had ruined every take. And then we were doing a movie called Saint Ralph, and he played a big part in it, and I just played this little part. And I come in to see him in his office, and he ruined every take of that. And then so out of that, we kind of developed.
So you
this
have
kind
a
of,
little bit of license to poke fun at.
Bug him a little bit, but
yeah.
You know, a couple of years ago, I was in Toronto for the Comedy Awards, and I was really just like, what's wrong with you, Gordon? Why is Christopher Plummer so amazing, getting great gigs, and look at you, huh? And I just was really good. And people were dying, but then his daughter, Leah, was just so upset with me for being mean to her dad. And I said to him, I'm so sorry. Leah's upset. He said, well, that's just what we do, Sean. That's what we do. And so he kind of let me off the hook, but I still felt bad because it was pretty.
Well, you don't want
harsh.
What did she say to you? Did she say
no?
That?
She just wouldn't talk to me. She walked. Oh, she walked by me.
Oh, wait a minute. That could have been. That could have been like the moment we had on Yonge Street.
Well, no, I think it was pretty studied. I didn't say, "Oh, there is Stanko."
There
and
was...
then left. You couldn't hear my eye roll, but it was happening.
But you heard her eye roll.
I saw it.
So,
because she was physically in front of me,
well, that's
looking
cool.
at me and then looking away and leaving with fury, spitting bile from her eyelids.
You know,
that kind of stuff stays with you.
It sure does.
You
it
know?
Makes you upset.
It does. And did you ever have after shows people ever like come up to you and say, I really hated how you.
Just Lubagoy. Lubagoy, if we had this is a strange story. I was doing this thing for. Phil Hartman,
right.
Foundation,
oh, yeah.
in Brantford, where he was from,
right.
at this beautiful theater, and it was like a big gala, and there were a lot of people on it. Lubagoy was on it, blah blah blah, and me, and And Lorne Michaels was there, and, you know, Dan Aykroyd, a lot of people.
Right. Wow.
And I, she did her bit, and it was whatever. And I did mine, and I just destroyed, like, I just killed it. And yeah. I did, like, 5 minutes. I was supposed to do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just absolutely tore the place apart.
Right.
And then afterwards at the party, like, and then Lorne Michaels came up and talked to me. Said, well, what do you do? Where are you coming? Where are you? And I got an audition for Saturday Night Live out of it, and that's another horrible story.
I've heard of that audition. I heard that you auditioned. Well, anyways, yeah.
Anyway, so I did that. So he was, everybody was, you know, wow, that was so great. Dan Aykroyd talked to me in his weird way and everything. And then she comes up to me and says, you know, as you become more experienced in this field, you're going to learn to do your time. You're not going to run over like you did today. And, right. you know, you get excited and you do a little too long, but, you know, you just got to learn to respect other people.
Right.
And I was like, your set didn't go well, did it? You didn't do well.
You said that back to her?
No, I didn't. But, I mean, it was just so annoying.
Because you did your time.
I did my time.
Yeah.
And I did well.
Yeah. So there was no issue. And
she is weird.
And, you know, I think
that should be almost
like
a compliment,
that,
really.
Yeah, it should be.
Take it as a compliment.
But then after that, I went down to New York and did a Catch a Rising Star. I did a Stand Up New York. I did a set, and the writers were there, and they said, "Would you like to come and be on Saturday Night Live? Just come and join the cast." And I was like, "Oh, yes, but I am in a deal with CBS right now.
Right.
And get out of it." So I didn't get to do the show. Well, I had it if I wanted it.
Yeah, but you were in the CBS thing.
And I couldn't add a deal that I was already in.
Like a holding deal kind of thing.
Yeah,
but is the invitation still
open? No, that was a while ago, and I'm very old now.
But you look the same as before.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe one day when I'm 70.
I would love to. I mean, there was a couple of years in there. Wasn't Michael McKean added to the cast at an older age?
Yeah, yeah.
And just that year.
Mike McKinney.
Yeah. Mark McKinney from Kids, right?
Mike McKinney, yeah.
And that whole year with Chris Elliott and Mark McKinney. Was that sort of the era we're talking about here?
No, it was 99.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, Tina Fey was there.
Mm. Oh, man.
It was a good time.
Yeah.
Horatio Sands.
Are there any more delightful stories like that you'd like to share?
I don't know.
I didn't mean to bring up the SNL thing, but, you know, being a huge SNL fan, I love just any story surrounding that show.
Sure.
Well, on WTF, Mark Maron's obsessed, it seems like, with
yeah, but he's got it in with Lorne Michaels.
Saturday Night Live. He's
got
it
in
with Lorne.
He had a
bad experience
with Lorne
Michaels.
I'm just a fan,
trying to get
man, and I just
story. He, even Lorraine Newman, he was trying to draw something out, and she's like, everyone loves Lorne, you know. But I don't know.
Now,
do you want to say anything horrible
I'd heard about
him?
No, I think he's all right.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a very successful guy. I don't know him at all.
Can you do an impression of him?
No. I can't do Dr. Evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Supposed to be him. Yes.
I can't do a Lorne Michaels impression, but I can do an impression of the many
Speaking
impressions
Speaking of Dr. Evil, you're in Love Guru.
I am in a terrible little cameo.
And there
it blows
a,
your mind.
There is a
it's
story,
a great story
that.
About that. I was in... I was... you know... Love Guru is a weird situation because Mike was coming back to Toronto to do a hockey movie with his Toronto Maple Leafs, and it was kind of like his nod to all the people he worked with in Second City and everything like that.
Right.
So he was going to put a lot of people from his past into the show. And first they did a staged reading of it, which I don't really understand why, but... I read Dick Pants, who was played eventually by the guy from, the English guy from The Daily Show.
Oh, John Oliver.
Oh,
yeah, John
yeah,
Oliver.
John Oliver. Yeah.
And we all had played these parts, and you know, we did it for nothing, and it was all at the Four Seasons Hotel Beautiful, like, or the Park Hyatt Beautiful, and blah,
Hopefully
blah, blah. We had to get
nice
back
catering.
The scripts and everything like that. And then he said, well, come and we want Sean to come in and audition.
Okay.
For the referee.
Right.
And say, oh, okay, so I get the script, and it's just like, you're out of here.
Right.
Blow your whistle. That was the audition, so I did that. 6 months go by.
Right.
I haven't heard anything. And then about a week before they start shooting, he calls and says, hey, somebody calls and says, we want Sean to be the referee in the movie.
We want him to blow the whistle.
Yeah. Right. So I say, okay, that's fine. I guess it'll be, you know, you can never say no to anything.
Yeah.
in Canada. And so you get in, I get in there, and I was about the next, my wife was very pregnant, like 9 months pregnant, mm-hmm. with our first son. And he, and so we get up at 6 a.m, I'm called at 6 or something like that. So we get up at 5 and she's going to drive me in, and then she, her water breaks in the kitchen, and she says, "I'll just go in, like I can't cancel now." So I just said, "Okay, we'll just go in, we'll see what how I progress, and if you have to leave, you have to leave. That's the way right. it goes." So I go in and I sit there for probably about 9 hours right. in a room. We're not allowed to eat the snacks.
Oh my God.
It's kind of a strange old, like, that's not yours. I was, you're treated like an extra, and all oh the people God. Who were on the show, like his Second City pals, were all treated like they had no lines. Uh-huh. They stood behind the bench, or they couldn't leave the shot. They'd be yeah. there forever, you know. And to get, and it was, you were just like a non-pay.
So he just wants to like watch the movie someday and be like, "All those guys, I really." No,
they could strange. Eat the snacks though. His buddies.
Yeah, yeah, I guess they could. I don't know. I mean, that's not necessarily true, but he would, if he was shooting, he would. The whole place was full of people. Like, it was shot at the ACC the first day. Mm-hmm. And the whole crowd was there mm-hmm. to be shot. And every wow. time he was like, they did a reverse, he would say, "I don't want these people in my eye line." Oh, so wow. everyone from one whole half of the mm-hmm. arena would have to be evacuated and moved into the tunnels.
I mean, has he always been holy like this? Shit. I mean, has
so
Mike
that
Myers...
would take an hour.
Is he? Oh, has he always been this
I don't
demanding?
Know. He's a bit mad.
Yeah.
But it's weird. And finally, you know, I did my shot stuff, and you know, it took me 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was out, and my wife had not really gone into labor yet. She okay. still God. Was baiting. So yeah. 12 hours, 12-hour day for 5 minutes. That's right. The movies. I get it.
Yeah.
And. So I did another day like that where they, I had something to do. I had a show at 10 o'clock at night. And right. they said, "Well, come in at 10. It's out in Pickering. We'll get you in and out. Boom." And I got out there at 10, put on my skates, got in my uniform, did the whole, and waited for about 11 hours. Uh-huh. And then they finally shot 4 minutes. And then I left. Uh-huh. And, you know, they just all treated me like I was, you know.
Was a snack situation improved?
Well, I do know we got water, bottled water and stuff. But, wow. you know, and you had a lunch with the extras.
Right.
But then I never seen the movie. I've never watched it. I didn't want to. But mm-hmm. I've been told that my dead voice was dubbed out and they put in another voice.
But you have a voice. I was going to say you and Gordon Pinsett should have a show together because there's just these two voice.
Well, they didn't find it adequate. Yeah. So they put a, they dubbed in someone else's voice to add to the humiliation of that. But, wow. you know, but there's, I know Mike Myers' brother, Paul Myers, he used to be a musician.
Right.
Played
yeah.
all the Gravel Berries.
Who had, like, he looks like Mike.
He's there. It's
Wayne's
incredible.
World,
well, he
like,
actually,
back in the day.
In the original, maybe it's the second Austin Powers movie, there's him in a block of ice and. There, it's actually Paul standing in the block
oh,
of ice.
Funny.
They look exactly yeah. alike.
They look alike, especially when he had longer hair.
Yeah.
Right, so. But he's got his guitar because he was in a band. I yeah. saw this a few times taking the subway back in the 90s.
People were like, "Are you Mike Myers?"
Well, yes. I knew better because I had seen, like, I'd yes. put two and two together because his videos would get played on Much Music.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mike Myers is in a legit band.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was his brother. But go on, sorry.
But anyway, he tells this funny story about when Phil Hartman died. It sounds right. like a bad thing.
Right.
But, what's his name? The little guy who always, that's a ticket. You know who I mean?
Oh, John Lovitz.
John Lovitz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John Lovitz was just the most outrageous guy, and he'd always say the worst possible thing
right.
just to get a laugh. And they're all at having a wake at Mike Myers' house, and everybody's there, all of Phil Hartman's friends. And Mike Myers says, "Oh, my God, I can't believe she killed him. It's so horrible." And everybody's like, "Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe she shot him and then shot herself." And everybody's like, "Oh, man. Yeah, it's terrible. I just can't believe that she, while he was asleep, completely unaware, she took a gun, put it up to his head, shot him to death, and then took that gun and shot herself in the head." And John Lovitz suddenly says, "You're making it sound much worse than it was." Because he's a pig. That makes me laugh. That makes me laugh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is it. I mean, we didn't do a firm end. We just kind of just faded into. Yeah. So this
I think
is.
You can fix it in post.
We don't. You don't want to like a.
Okay. If you want, what do you want to say? Bye. Thank you, Sean.
Well, it's been a real pleasure being here today. I love this area.
Is this the formal ending?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying my life.
It's a magic thing having you here.
My life has been enhanced by this experience, and I want to thank you.
That's all we want, to
Nick,
enhance your
Danko.
Life.
Yeah, thank everybody you. Fired thank you. Up. We got to win that silver cup.
You, sir. You with the gentle hands that would make an ostrich squeal. What? It's the mood of an angel tonight. Marshmallows. I will take marshmallows and I will melt them in a giant vat. And then I will take the melted marshmallow, hot, 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 and pour it into the back of a blacksmith's bellows. Then I will creep into your house at night, stand over your upturned nostrils as you snore, and drive hot marshmallow into your lungs. And you say, oh, where's the chocolate and the food of your choice? Well, and you're lying tonight. Yes, the food of your choice. Well, and you're lying tonight.
Thank you.